Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I love the fact that I got an email today, and this is one of those moments that just kind of grabs your attention and goes, where exactly have you been for the last, six, seven years, eight? The subject line of the email was, overturning Roe is not a single issue, but the first step to far worse. I'm going, is this really the first step? I would argue first step happened a long time ago. If you look at what our Supreme Court's been doing for the last, about 22 years, bad decisions for quite some time. This just the next in what I argue going to be several more down the line. But this is a big one, not diminishing, big one. But just the next in the class war that another segment of the population going to be harmed by. And this is why I keep saying, every time this comes up, whether it was voting rights, whether it was workers' rights, whether it was consumer rights, not women's rights, if it hasn't hit you yet, it's coming. So how about we fight now to stop this from getting any worse? And here to share some thoughts on, well, how horrible this fight is and why we should be fighting this one now so that maybe we don't have to worry about the ones down the road. I've asked Elisa Spitzer to come talk with us. She is a policy analyst with the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is their website. Elisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, I see this email today, and I got to tell you, maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong on this? That, look, there are some who are going, oh, my God, I can't believe this just happened. This is so huge. It is big. It is a big thing. But it's another one of these death of a thousand paper cuts, another movement towards a repeal of the 20th century and all the progress that generations before us fought for. It is a big one. It is not the big one. But I'm curious your thoughts.
So I think that the death of a thousand paper cuts is unfortunately apt. Since Roe was decided in 1973, there have been, I believe it's 1,338 state restrictions that have been passed in some way limiting abortion access, trap laws or variety of approaches. But this has been an item on the to-do list for people who oppose abortion access and full equality for women for a very, very, very long time. And so it is, for people who have been watching quite closely, not necessarily a surprise, particularly with the most recent appointments to the bench, but it is still stunning to see it in writing, which we all did, of course, in the leaked draft opinion.
But Susan Collins said that they weren't going to do this. She looked into their souls. They promised her this wasn't going to happen. At least I thought we had some assurance that wasn't going to happen because stare decisis, balls and strikes, or am I missing something?
No, you're not. I mean, Roe has been the law for just a year shy of 50 years. It has been in place for generations. When people think about what it was like before Roe, I at least am thinking about my grandmother and great grandmother. You're right to think that this was settled law. People were right to take that for granted. And now I think we might be entering a new era.
What do you say to the people? And I've had conversations with younger women who don't see this as kind of a hair on fire moment. And maybe this is a good thing. Maybe the younger generation feels more empowered than the older generation, with some of the women that I've talked to who see this as a real tragedy and a real, you know, infringement on rights of future women and all of this. But what do you say to the to a younger generation that feels, you know, we're not going backward, you're not going to take my rights away, even though the law is changing? What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Supreme Court's jurisprudence can seem somewhat abstract. You know, it seems like there's a distance between what they put down on paper and what actually reaches you personally and in the depths of your private decisions and how you understand your future. I think I would just point them to state trigger laws and the state laws that will go to effect. It is expected that somewhere between 26 and up to 28 states are poised, like standing at the ready, to outlaw abortion when and if, we say if because it hasn't happened yet, the Supreme Court decides to overturn Roe. And, you know, it's unfortunate if it doesn't feel real until it's real.
Yeah.
But it likely will soon be real.
Now, you couch that in terms of, you know, maybe there's a possibility, because I keep hearing this as well. Don't get too upset. This could all change. This was a first draft, which is why, again, I think it was leaked when it was leaked. And I have a theory. I think it was a certain Supreme Court justice's wife that did it. Just my personal opinion. I have no factual basis to make that, other than maybe there was a time in the past where this may have happened, where something was leaked. But just kind of spitballing here a little bit. But it's my thought that they put this out there knowing that there's almost no way the Supreme Court can now walk back from this. They've set the goalpost. But do you think there's a way they can soften this and walk it back at this point?
So I think that technically they can do whatever they want at this point. They are in no way legally bound or committed to anything in this draft. This was a first draft, and an early draft at very least, and I've had early drafts that look quite different from where things end up. So this is the optimist in me you are hearing. I am quite nervous. I do not really think there is much space for hope. I think that there definitely, this could be made less bad on the margins. Right now, the way the draft is written, it very directly calls into question contraception and gay rights and sort of precedents that we really wanted not to touch.
And yeah, basically a repeal of the 20th century, which I've been saying for about 17 years of doing this program, that this has been the conservative wet dream for a very long time, to undo all of the 20th century and return us to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s.
Right. It is definitely a jurisprudence of a different era and a different century. So I think that I am not terribly optimistic, but I do think that there are conversations and negotiations that very well could have happened between February 10th, which is the date on the leaked draft, and the present, that maybe will make it less harmful in sort of other doctrinal ways. But I think in terms of the effect on limiting abortion access, the people who will be directly hurt and forced to carry pregnancies to term, whose job prospects and graduation rates and ability to determine the course of their own lives, I think that will be real.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Elisa Spitzer. She is the policy analyst over at the Center for American Progress, where she specializes in women's initiative. You can check out their website, americanprogress.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at the work that they do. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, again, you know, people are pointing, saying, well, you know, I don't see the outrage. You know, there were a handful of people out at Kavanaugh's house. There was the rumor that Alito had gone down into whatever, some special bunker, I don't know. The Senate immediately jumped into action in the most bipartisan of terms to get special policing powers for our justices, who nobody thought was in any real danger. But, you know, hey, we had to act. Because you crazy women can't be trusted, evidently, to, you know, protest peacefully. And Susan Collins called the police on you, too, for putting chalk on her sidewalk, which, bad chalk.
Meanwhile, abortion protesters are actually endangering people who are just trying to go to their appointments at the clinic and threatening providers and providers' families. And there is a security issue, but it doesn't, at least from what I'm aware of, seem to be primarily targeted at the court.
And this is where I was going with this, because, you know, for decades now, we've had right-wing zealots who are blowing up clinics, who are threatening people, who... Where was this kind of bipartisanship to protect people, actual we the people instead of our elites, back then? And this is where I struggle with all of the things, the attacks that are happening to the working class of this country. And I focus solely on the working class. And you can agree or disagree with me, because I believe that this decision will kill poor and working class women. This isn't going to affect rich women. They're going to get what they need, even if they have to leave the country to do it. They're going to have the access that they want and need, regardless, because they're going to have the resources to do it. This is going to focus heavily on poor and working class women and families, which is, again, I think part of the reason why they're doing it.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that it is just factually true that traveling, so because abortion will be unavailable in likely over half of the states, it means that people in those states will have to travel in order to obtain the health care that they need. Traveling is very expensive. Traveling is not something you can do if you can't afford childcare, if you can't afford to take time off of work, if you can't pay for the expense of abortion, which, you know, is difficult to get coverage of. It is really an economic justice issue, absolutely.
And the other part of this, the scarier part of this, is with the technology that we've seen that's already, you know, just available to anybody almost, you can find who's going where. My fear, and this is where this gets even worse for me, you look at the Texas law, the bounty hunter stuff. Do we turn, you know, hunting women and their bodies into a reality show? Is this the next Dog the Bounty Hunter thing? Is this the next money-making venture for people to hunt down you and women across this country who, you know, look at the case in Texas where the woman had a miscarriage and immediately they rush in to try and charge her with a crime? Is this the direction that things are starting to go? Not just where we're taking your right to self-determination and your health care away, but also going to that next level of persecution, prosecution, just to make points. I and also us really ratting out each other and creating even more, I don't know what the right word is, even more harassment of women in all different facets. Or am I just reading too much into this?
The threat of criminalization is very real. It used to be that in abortion prohibitions, prosecuting the person seeking care was anathema. That was not done. However, frighteningly, that might be changing. Louisiana had a statute that I believe today was actually just withdrawn, but it had been voted out of committee and actually was being discussed on the floor of the House that would have changed the definition of personhood for purposes of their criminal statute to include a fertilized egg, meaning that certain forms of contraception and abortion would actually have been qualified as murder and could have been punished as such. So fortunately, that is not on the path to becoming law, but it is absurd and it is horrifying, and sort of unimaginable things are actually under discussion.
Do you find it as bizarre as I do, the fact that there are people who are pushing to repeal this, force women to have children, and then are giving no help whatsoever that once the child is born, we're going to actually care for them. We're going to actually get, you know, women the prenatal care. Because as I understand, and obviously you're probably much more better versed at this than I am, but when you're talking about poor women, you know, in prenatal care and death in this country, we're almost a third world nation. When you're talking about women in poverty dying in this country during childbirth. And yet I don't see the Republicans and the people who are pushing this stuff moving any type of policy to change that, to get early childhood care, to get, you know, maternity leave, to get, you know, education, to get health care, to get, you know, food assistance. you know, I see Marjorie Traitor Greene out there yelling about formula, but I don't see any legislation to help try and get any more formula out of her other than just grievance and finger painting and outrage candy. Yet here are these people, no policy aims to help once the child come, once we pop something out. And I find that very, very odd and very interesting.
It is true that the United States has horrific maternal mortality rates and that our supports for parents, caregivers, young children, families really are paltry as compared to equivalent countries. You know, paid leave shouldn't have been so contentious. It's phenomenal that we don't have it. Totally agree with you.
No, because here's where my thoughts are. And look, I'm just an old white guy. You know, my childbearing years well behind me. Not that I ever had any, but I would think, and again, I'm just speaking, you know, hypothetically, because I don't actually, I've never been in the position. My wife has had three children. We've got three kids. We wanted them. We planned them. You know, we were prepared for them. We you know, all that. It seems to me that if you have an environment that is conducive for people to bring children in, where you're going to have the health care that they need, it's going to be much more welcoming. They're going to get education. You're going to have jobs that are going to be able to support them. You're going to have safe neighborhoods and housing that's affordable, where you're going to have an environment that's conducive to raising children and supporting families, that's going to be much more conducive to people wanting to have children and not have abortions than saying you must. And oh, I don't know, maybe some policy. Again, I'm a policy guy saying, you know what, maybe we want to make sure that people get contraception. Maybe we want to make sure we do some education. Instead, what we get is idiotic head in the sand, abstinence only nonsense. We're going after contraception, which again, I guess that's on the table now after, you know, 50 plus odd years. And policies just literally take food out of the mouths of children. And I'm going, what kind of insanity is this? How are we encouraging people to have children in this kind of environment? Again, I ask, or am I missing something?
You are not missing anything. I think it's important that even if there were all of those supports, that should be the baseline. And then people should be free to make the decision about whether they personally want with their body to have children, if they want in the course of their life to have children. It is an enormous commitment. I speak from experience. And, but it is the idea that we are going to be in a situation where people are forced to give birth without those supports is especially cruel.
Yeah. And we're going to put women in desperate situations, which again, you know, I look, there's a political ideology that wants working class people desperate. They want them pliable. You know, we're moving back toward the Lochner era of wages and hours and conditions. And back, like I said, back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. Last question I've got for you. Here's my problem. I'm not seeing the kind of outrage. And again, we can go back to every one of these death of 1,000 paper cuts, where it was the attack on voting rights, consumer rights, workers' rights, all of this. The outrage that I would hope to see, I don't think I'm seeing yet. Are we going to see it? Are you seeing it? Because I think there are people who are going, well, it must not be that big of a deal. Not seeing much outrage. Thoughts?
I'm seeing outrage. I'm feeling outrage. I've been to protests. I know more are coming. And I think that the fact that this was a leaked opinion has sort of tempered it. I think the fact that a lot of us have been waiting for this day to come and fearing this day for a while, maybe is part of it, that it's sort of the shock of it there isn't so much shock really, but yeah, I imagine you'll see some more.
Damn well better. Cause you know, at the end of this, I look at our political leaders. They were such a big hurry to protect the Supreme Court justices. But man, when it comes to protecting, like I said, consumers, workers, women, we'll see. I guess this is why elections matter, and why I hope voters go to the polls angry, and I hope you go in large numbers and throw bums out and bring people in who are going to have the passions of the people to bring back policy that's going to move us in a better direction. But Elisa, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your expertise, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks for having me.
Elisa Spitzer, policy analyst there at the Center for American Progress. Make sure you check out the work that they do at AmericanProgress.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Fairly important that we grab the podcast and move that right along. All good stuff. Let's go to the let's go to the phone lines. Got Gary on line one. Gary, how are we doing today?
I'm as frustrated and afraid as just about everybody.
Join the club. So, what's got you frustrated and afraid, brother?
Well, you asked a question just a few seconds ago, or actually, you made a statement. The statement was that you felt that you're not seeing the outrage. I'm just north of Philly, and I can tell you that I don't know anyone that isn't outraged except for those who are on the right now.
Good.
I haven't met a soul. There is not a single person I've talked to that I hang out with that is not terrified of what's occurring, and I'm very clear that we are, we're angry, we're frustrated, and we're terrified. And I'm also speaking partially as a Jewish person. These guys want to make America a Christian nation. And when I was growing up, I'm 66 now, when I was growing up and going to Hebrew school, not long after the Holocaust, about 20 years, they were telling us that this can happen again. And to be aware of it. The Holocaust can happen again. In fact, it's still happening all over the world in one way or another. Genocide is clearly happening. The other thing that I actually did want to say is that you asked a question, or actually you made a statement. You said that you don't understand why Biden would start labeling folks as ultra-MAGA. And I don't think he's talking to the left. I actually think he's talking to the undecided, the folks that are still trying to figure out where they stand. And the right wing has been extraordinarily good at calling us radical liberal leftists. And I think this is his way of going in the other direction. Just kind of like Jamie Raskin has been really tearing into the person you call Marjorie Prater Greene.
Right.
So, I think there's lots of interesting things that are going on. I'm not certain that we're in the clear. I'm absolutely certain that we're not. But I'm really hoping that the left becomes far more aggressive in terms of their labeling for the middle of the road.
I'm right there with you, Gary. I appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. Please call back again. I appreciate it. I got to take a quick break here. I'm with you. I'm glad to hear there is outrage. Quick break.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, I'm thrilled to hear Gary, you know, say that, you know, that people are outraged. I'm glad to hear that there's that emotion out there, that there's that fire out there, that people are aware. I'm thrilled to hear it, and I think we should be hearing more of it. I think there should be more. I think people should be outraged. At least, you know, that's That is my hope. Let's go to the phone lines and see. We got Julie on line two. Julie, how are we doing today?
Hi, Rick. You know, it might have something to do with the people you know, but I don't know anybody that's not outraged either. But what I wanted to comment on was I hear a lot of people saying, well, if they're really pro-life, they would want to provide education for these babies. They would want to provide health care. They would want to help with food. The whole idea, when you stop to think about it, is they want poor women, let's get real. They want poor white women to feel hopelessly pressured to give up their babies and give them to the far right. I mean, handmaiden gal on the Supreme Court, she says, adoption, adoption. And they have the structure in place and to do it. And the adoption agencies and working with the church, they have a baby lust for white babies. Let's get real. What do you think about that?
No, I don't disagree with that. But the problem is, having grown up where I grew up in a housing project, a minority in a minority community, I saw poverty firsthand. And if you're going to force single mothers to have children, you know, there's got to be a way to ensure that the kind of suffering and violence and inhumanity that I saw growing up doesn't happen. And
well, yeah, that's the moral thing to do. That's the compassionate thing to do. That's if you've got warm blood running in your veins and not if you have some kind of cold reptilian soul. But I'm saying, let's be honest, the other side seems to have a cold reptilian soul, and you're right. And I feel the same way. If you're going to force poor women to have children, society has a responsibility. But the other side that is in power with the Supreme Court and everything, that's what they are about, and that's what we're up against. You know what I'm saying?
I completely understand, and I hear you, Julie. And I tell you, I'm thrilled to hear people are outraged, you know, because I'll tell you, the conversations I'm having with people, I'm hearing, you know, younger women saying, no, we'll work around it. They're not going to take my rights away. There's this idea that it's not going to be as bad as I believe it's going to be, because I think this is, again,
I wish they were right. I would love to be wrong. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I sure do. But Julie, I appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Seriously, I'm happy to hear people, and I want people to be outraged. I want people calling their representatives. I want people being fired up, talking to their neighbors. I want people committing to voting. I want people committing to throwing the bums out. This is what we should be doing. And the Democrats had better get their heads out of the sand and start leading the charge and stoking this outrage and getting out in front of this, at least my thoughts. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
I'm sorry I had to grab a couple of calls that I think, you know, look, I've been saying I haven't seen the outrage that I would hope that I would be seeing. Maybe I'm starting to see it. Maybe people are outraged, and I'm just not seeing in this moment. I'm curious, you, as this leak of the Supreme Court decision has been out, are you seeing the kind of outrage that you would think that you would have seen in this moment?
No, not in mass. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, people are obviously upset about this and people are speaking out and there's been some protests. So I'm not saying that there hasn't been a reaction. But as far as, you know, listening to people, which I do, I've got friends all over the country, and hearing, you know, this issue come up first, no, I don't in a lot of cases. So I don't think it's to the level, you know, that it may get to, Rick, as the time nears closer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled to hear people are taking this serious. I also wanted to get your thoughts on Rand Paul yesterday blocking the Ukrainian aid. I'm trying to figure out the sense of this. I know he said, you know, it's my oath of office, it's to the Constitution, not to a foreign nation. And I'm going, is this the fight you want to make?
No, it's not. Now, you know the history of Rand Paul, how he has done this before, not on the Ukraine, of course, but on other issues. He's done it on a budget issue. Then he holds it up and then he releases it. But he blocked this bipartisan effort, which is absolutely amazing that he did that. I just don't understand what he gets out of it or what point he makes on it.
Yeah, I'm not understanding where a lot of the Republicans are in this moment. I mean, you saw Marjorie Greene going on about how we're going to give them $40 billion, but we're not doing anything on baby formula. We see some of the statements that are coming out, and you go, how are those connected? Especially since you don't have a bill to do anything on baby formula. Put something out. I want to see something.
Right. Now, McConnell and Schumer did offer to allow a vote on Ron Paul's amendment, but he insisted it would be added to the underlying bill. So they said, okay, we'll give you a vote, on an amendment he had. And it would have made his amendment is to make a special inspector general to oversee how the Ukraine military aid is spent. So they said, well, okay, we'll give you a vote on it. But that wasn't enough for him. He wanted it in the underlying measure of the bill, and he held the bill up. It's quite amazing. I understand he does this accountability thing. He's done it before on issues, but on this one, I think it's pretty clear where the money's going to go.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Pretty clear.
Now I got to get your thoughts on yesterday's big news of the subpoenas that went out to Kevin McCarthy, to Jim Jordan, the Ohio representative, to my congressman Scott Perry, Andy Biggs of Arizona, and Mo Brooks of Alabama. I don't think anybody thinks that they're going to testify. I don't think anyone thinks the subpoenas are going to bring them in. You think this was a smart move to subpoena them?
Well, what is going to happen, of course, is that the Republicans then are going to, if they take control, are going to say, okay, we're going to subpoena certain members to ask them, certain things. So it'll be a sort of a precedent-setting payback, I guess you could say, and they made that argument. Beyond listening to that argument about who's going to control the chamber or not and what they're going to do, which let's take a broader brush on that, Rick. There's a lot of, if the Republicans control the chamber, are they going to do other things beyond subpoena Democrat members? But
They're going to. I mean, if you saw the polling out today,
for other things.
The polling out today is that a large majority of Republicans want to impeach Joe Biden, and you go for what?
Right. So they made that statement. But as far as the issue itself, I don't think that it's going to go anywhere. It makes a fight now between the Democrats and the Republicans about complying with the subpoena or not, and then that will be an issue that will drag on. I don't know how you in an emergency basis alleviate that in court to say, McCarthy, you're going to testify. I highly doubt that happens. So it'll be just an argument back and forth between the committee and McCarthy. I just don't see it going anywhere.
Yeah, and look, if they don't testify, if you're right and Republicans take control, this will be Democrats going, well, you didn't testify, we're not going to either. So
right.
it'll set a precedent
right
there. But I'm still of the position of, if it's you, if it's me, if it's anybody else, they subpoena us, someone sits our butt in that chair. And
right,
the fact that they are our representatives, that what they did was in our name, I got to tell you, I think that should supersede all of that. That I think we have a right to know what they were doing in our name. That I'm sorry, you've got rights, absolutely, as an individual, and you got rights to not incriminate yourself, but you are our representative. There should be more transparency on you than the average citizen. Or am I just being, just being me?
Well, no, it's not equal application under the law. I used examples when the insurrection came about. If you and I broke a post office window, it's going to be pretty clear-cut destruction of federal property. But all of a sudden, it was selfies, and they, and let's give them a break, et cetera, when they, stormed the Capitol. It's the same thing here. It's not the same application for the regular citizen. if we, you and I, get subpoenaed by a county prosecutor, guess what? It's going to have force and authority to it. And this is the congressional level. So there's not equal application under the law when it comes to these members.
Yeah, we're
at all.
We are definitely in interesting times. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I wanted to get your thoughts on the NATO stuff that's going on. Finland, Sweden, now talking about, they're going to be moving towards NATO. We've had these conversations before that, there are some who believe that, the expansion of NATO was, something that shouldn't have happened after the fall of the wall. Some people have told me, we promised that we would never do that. I can't seem to find where George H.W. Bush made that promise, but I'm curious your thoughts. Is this a good idea, bad idea? Where do you see this going?
Well, I think for Finland to make that decision was a good idea. And Sweden, who has had a 200-year history of not making a decision to be a part of anything, is now leaning towards that direction. And this is all due to Vladimir Putin and his actions in the Ukraine. Now, what really amazes me is that the Russian defense minister, once again, when he talks about Finland coming into NATO, uses the word nuclear. What do they think? Finland's going to attack Russia, and they're going to have to launch nuclear weapons? I mean, Russia's boldness of aggression is beyond comprehension. I think for Finland's purposes, it's good that it will go into NATO for some form of official protection. If Ukraine was part of NATO, there would have been a flyby, or blocking the Russians with the flyovers would have happened. So I think Finland going in is a good thing. Russia, of course, if it's saying that, this type of thing could lead to the use of nuclear weapons, is that because they have an intention someday to invade Finland? Is that what's out there? I mean, I just don't trust the Russians, period, on this.
No, I don't trust Putin at all.
This is
him devolving. And now we hear that, I guess Lloyd Austin's had some conversations with some top Russian diplomats. Is this going to lead us in any direction, hopefully? Do you see an end to this? I mean, because this is where I'm going, where does this end? Because, the atrocities that we're seeing, in fact, there's a Russian soldier, as we speak, a 21-year-old kid on trial for shooting a 62-year-old man in the head while he was riding his bike unarmed. And you're going to hear all of these horrible tragedies and all of these things that are going to come up. There's got to be some way, there's got to be an end to this.
I think the only way that potentially it will come to where you have some type of solution is for people like Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to speak with his counterparts, and then ideas come forth from those counterparts to each other. It's not going to happen at the level of Putin. It's going to have to happen from some ideas, from defense ministers in Russia and from, our defense secretary, obviously. But do I think something's going to, be thrown out on the table to go with it? I don't see it happening. I don't see it ending quick, because Russia now has put itself in its mind, through Putin's deranged mind, has put itself into a position of no way out. I mean, it doesn't seem that you can offer Russia anything. The White House indicated the other day they were looking for, and they even said some ways out for Russia. And I don't know what you give Putin to satisfy his ego at this point in time. So I think it's going to continue on and on until hopefully enough armaments for the Ukrainians, or maybe there can be some type of stopping the Russian air bombing to at least at some point in time force some type of agreement, where, I don't know, Ukraine makes a statement about, NATO that Putin wants. I thought originally that's what this was about, and it wasn't. It was about Putin being totally out of control.
Yeah, I mean, all of the things that he said this was about, it wasn't about.
It wasn't. It wasn't at all. I thought he was, I believe the world thought he was trying to get some type of compromise, some type of statement. It wasn't about that. It was about pure aggression. And he's convinced his people in Russia that if he doesn't do this, the West is going to march in and you know, take over Russia itself. He's convinced them of it. 83% of the people are supporting. So you have a lunatic in control that has the population, for the most part, supporting what he's doing. So I don't see a quick way out.
There's literally no way back from this.
No, I don't see it.
Scary stuff. Last question I got for you. I'm looking at North Korea right now, and they're talking about potentially an explosion of COVID there. This could be the next global outbreak point. Evidently, six people have died and 350,000 have been treated for some kind of spread going on there. Not that we would know what's going on in North Korea, but there seems to be some concern. Any thoughts?
You know, it's the hermit kingdom. And with Kim Jong-un, you never know what really is going on there. Now, North Korea itself, of course, is officially saying that they're experiencing a massive outbreak of COVID with 350,000 cases. And that was just 24 hours after they claimed to have found the first ever case of COVID. So I don't know. I'm a bit skeptical that they find the first case of COVID and that within one day they have 350,000, you know, outbreak. Although he starved his population, they're in horrible abject poverty. So I guess anything would be possible. But you never, Rick, you just never know with information coming out of there. Remember when everybody thought he was dead, and you know, you just don't know with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, again, another lunatic.
Right.
The world, you know, being held hostage by another lunatic. Bob, I appreciate the time, as always. Good stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Nay. Going to take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. If you've just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss an episode. Subscribe, like, share, all of that stuff. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back after this. Stick around. Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. So interesting couple of days here in the state of Pennsylvania where I live. Our primary is coming up here in a couple of days, and the governor's race is getting kind of interesting as the Pennsylvania State Senate President pro tempore Jake Corman yesterday suspended his campaign officially and endorsed the former congressman from my district, former Congressman Lou Beacon Teeth Barletta. If you've ever seen him, tanned, you know, like dark tan with these, you know, just beacon, giant chomper, glowing teeth. It's kind of scary when you see him walk down the street. They're like, you know, big chomper, like cartoon teeth almost. But today, former Congresswoman Melissa Hart, she followed suit. Because what's going on is the Republicans are freaking out by the fact that Doug Mastriano, the state senator and, you know, January 6th leader, took a bunch of people down to the January 6th rally. And, you know, QAnon, really kind of far out, extreme, crazy, way out guy is kind of leading, and now the rumor is Trump is going to endorse him at any minute. This has got the Republican establishment here in the state kind of concerned, because Pennsylvania, we're going to find out just how crazy Pennsylvania is becoming, because, you know, the Republicans don't believe that Pennsylvania is this extreme of a state, and they fear that they're going to lose both the governor and the Senate race. Because their candidates are flipping nuts, and then the Senate side, you've got three of them that are, you got Dr. Oz, which is, you know, right up Trump's alley. You know, the guy who, you know, TV celebrity with you know, very loose ideology. You know, whatever, ask him a question today, he'll change his mind tomorrow. You got this Dave McCormick, who, you know, wealthy investor, wealthy guy, you know. he's kind of more the traditional-ish Republican thought. And then this Kathy Barnett, who, you know, full-on, you know, wild conspiracy, you know, regularly attacking gay people and Muslims and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And a little questionable with the truth. You know, for instance, it's one of those things where I guess she was asked if she voted in the 2016 election, because people ask questions when you're a candidate, and you probably shouldn't lie. But evidently, Kathy Barnett just couldn't not lie and, you know, said that she voted. And then when asked again, doubled down and said she voted when voting records say that she didn't, that she didn't vote until 2018. And then voted 2018, 2020, and then 2021. And again, like I said, she was asked again, and absolutely doubled down. And again, about her military record, you know, said she was in the military, you know, she was a 10-year veteran. The records that she released evidently only show 8. And you go, well, you know, it's not that big. Yeah, big deal. Facts matter. She could win. It's kind of interesting. Now, we had Ted Cruz, who didn't bother going to Cancun this weekend, maybe got lost going to Cancun, came to Pennsylvania and said instead, you know, mocking Republicans for sucking up to Donald Trump. He was out pimping Dave McCormick, the Senate candidate. And why, again, Ted Cruz is here, I have no idea. But I found it interesting that he's now, after all of the things that he, all of the brown nosing or orange nosing, I guess, is a better way of putting it. That he did with Trump, he's now found some beer muscles. Going to be an interesting Tuesday here in Pennsylvania to see, you know, which way the state goes. Because for me, this is kind of that, going to be kind of the weather vane to see which way the wind's blowing in this state. And ultimately, which way the state goes in November. There's an opportunity for Democrats to pick up a couple of seats here, a governor's seat, hold on to, and pick up a Senate seat. There's a good opportunity here. Just a matter of how extreme is the Republican base right now? And how much does Roe hurt them in this state? Bob Casey came out and said he would support codifying Roe into law. That is a huge thing. That's why elections matter. That's why voting matters. That's why you've got to make sure wherever you are, make sure you're registered, make sure you commit to voting. And then we start throwing some of these bums out. If you missed any of today's program, therickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show.